We're so close, it's so distracting.
It is weird.
If Nick just leant forward a couple more inches, we'd literally kiss. This could be the weirdest podcast I've ever done.
Our lips could meet over a robotic phallus. Just for the listener to get a sense of what's going on, we couldn't get a studio. We're in so the sound might be a bit funny, and my ears are still a bit wonky.
Sorry.
So we're in an unusual situation. We're in an unusual room setting. There may be a background hum. It's because we're in a room in outer space under the ocean. So that's the air conditioning recycling our air. We only have a certain amount of air, so this is probably going to be quite a short show. Those of you who are familiar with my voice will probably be able to tell that I'm still not feeling...
You still sound a bit poorly sick.
I'm not, and I can't hear anything. So I have to rely entirely on James to make sure that the sound check worked. Because we're on a similar mic to our old mic.
Is that not the same mic?
No, this is one that was borrowed from a colleague.
It's so similar, I thought it was the same thing.
I just had to check something. Carry on talking, James.
I tell you what's really putting me off is there are pictures on the wall opposite me. And the first one is a picture of Craig David, who his pictures are everywhere around this institution. And he has this really weird award in front of him of, it looks like a woman walking along reading a book. I don't know if like he went in for a sports day and he got like a participant award or something. But it's pre-Uber Beefcake Craig David. So he's clearly working out, but he's not, like, he's ripped now. I don't know if you've seen him recently.
I didn't realise he was still alive.
No, he's definitely alive. And then to the right of that is a picture of a young lady, beautiful young lady, actually, but she's clearly sat in a funeral home, and there's a little thing saying she is actually a funeral director, but she's got no shoes on and an urn next to her feet, which is a bit curious.
They're very nice photographs. If you just bear with me a second, James.
Okay.
Just a second.
Right, will do.
Listener, something may happen to the sound quality.
Are we back in the room?
Yes.
The spikes look different, Nick.
Oh, hang on then. So anyway, so I can't hear anything. I'm still not well. I exchanged emails with our friend, life partner, Steve, earlier on.
Hello, Steve.
We talked at length about how ill Jane, who is our compatriot on the other podcast, not the other Xbox.
She's been tremendously ill, hasn't
and,
she?
And also, yeah, and she and I have been. I think the main difference is sleep. The one thing I never have any trouble with, even when I'm ill, is sleeping. So I've been getting plenty of sleep, and I don't think she has. And it's, try and get sleep, people.
Yeah, it's good for you.
Yeah, and if you've got a child, try, because this is something we've been going through a little bit at the moment. Try not to encode fussiness in them about sleep. Because I think that's where you learn to be fussy. I mean, okay, some people, personality-wise, are just always are going to have a particular relationship to sleep. And that probably starts from when you're a baby. Some babies just are more difficult to get to sleep than other babies. And we happen to be quite lucky at the moment that Noah is very easy to get to sleep. But we've possibly gone too far in the other direction in that we fret about when he is having trouble going to sleep, because he's teething at the moment. So when he's having a little bit of trouble, we think really hard about, like, okay, so having his little, he's got this thing called Taggy, that is this a thing that our friends Jamie and Dommy's mum made him, which is like this rectangle of material with nice feeling materials with little tags on it, because babies like that.
And it's called Taggy.
Well, we call it Taggy.
Okay.
It's not branded. She made it.
Fair enough.
And it, we found that when he's fussing because he's struggling to get sleep because he's uncomfortable, it actually, having something to put in his mouth, even if it doesn't give him any relief, really helps.
He doesn't have a dummy, I take it.
No, he doesn't. We haven't gone down that route yet.
It's best not to if you can get away with it.
Yeah, and but for the same reasons that I'm talking about, that so we've kind of deliberated, well, okay, do we, if it seems he's likely to be struggling, because you normally, you put him down, and you normally know within a few seconds if he's going to grizzle completely, but sometimes it can be a couple of minutes after you've gone downstairs before he starts crying. So we're like, well, we don't want to give him Taggy straight away, because we don't want him to associate going to sleep with this one thing, because then he might become too reliant on that one thing. So we don't want him to be too dependent on we don't want him to be too dependent on this extra thing to get to sleep. But on the other hand, we're like, but is it more damaging if we leave it until he cries and then go upstairs? Because then does he learn that if he cries, we'll always come running? Now, at the moment, he's at that age where when they cry, you do tend to come running. But that's why we're thinking it tends to be easier. If we can stop him getting to the point where he's crying, then maybe we'll never get that behaviour.
Are you considering the controlled crying method?
Isn't it a bit late to be thinking about stuff like that?
No, I don't
think
so. What's
the controlled crying method?
Is where,
can you explain that for our listener?
Is where, and we did this for a little while, is where... I think Noah might actually be a little bit young, I can't remember. But controlled crying is where your child starts to learn that crying can manipulate you.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a manipulative tool on their part. So what you do is you let them cry for a few minutes and then attend to them. So actually let them cry out. And we found, I really genuinely forget the age we started, but actually if you leave it for a few minutes, they will cry themselves out quite quickly if it is a manipulative cry.
Yeah.
So
because they never learn the behaviour that you'll come eventually. If
it makes you feel very guilty as a parent, because obviously you're designed, you're wired up to that triggers you to do something. But obviously, but it actually worked quite effectively, and for the most part, Scarlett is very good at settling and very good at sleeping now as a 3.5-year-old. Although I'm more on that in a moment.
Well, that's the, I mean, the thing is, Noah, because he doesn't cry an awful lot, we don't really want, we haven't thought that much about how we'd handle it if he does, but that's almost been a problem. This is like pure easy child privilege we're talking about here. There are, in so many ways, and part of this is being able to, him being bottle fed, there are so many ways in which he is so easy and so chilled out that when he does behave like a normal baby, in inverted commas, I didn't do the inverted commas, but I felt the need to say them because I don't want to be normative.
I felt them in my heart.
Yeah. The inverted commas that are in your heart are the most important ones, I think.
They are, and I think it's important you keep them there.
Yes, I agree. But so whenever he does anything a little bit weird or like a normal baby, like he's inconsolable in the evenings or something, it's we go, if it happens for two nights, suddenly we're in a panic because we aren't used to it at all. It just hasn't happened before. And I mean, part of it, maybe I shouldn't be too sort of apologetic for this stuff, because it's possible that part of the reason he's so easy now is because of the way we've been behaving. So maybe we're doing something right, but it's more likely that he's just a really easygoing baby.
Possibly.
Only ruin him.
It's so changeable there, and that is all the advice I've read about, and it always made me nervous, because Scarlett was always very good at settling, actually. Although, to be honest with you, I was very stressful in her first sort of 6 to 8 months. I found almost constantly crushingly stress-inducing. It's ludicrous. I loved her, and it was wonderful, and I loved the interaction, but like the constant getting used to the demands and so forth, I found really stressful.
Only child.
Yeah, absolutely. It was difficult. I had to give things up. I had to give time up. Mm-hmm. I had to share time. It was difficult. And also, I wish I'd been a non-smoker.
Because
I'd often find that actually, when I was trapped under Scarlet, that's when I really craved for a cigarette. I don't think I'm going to go too deeply into that. You're probably right. It probably was parts of my sort of selfish personality coming out with that shout.
Smoking fits with... smoking has behaviours that kind of fit with quite selfish.
I can't do it. I need a cigarette.
Yeah. Or, oh God, films are just too long. I can't go to the cinema because I need a cigarette. No, that's just, honestly, don't chill out, man.
It's one of the, actually one of the best things. It's just an aside. I've got to think about children sleeping, but as an aside, I have found it really freeing at bedtime, not being a smoker. I enjoy the bedtime routine with Scarlett so much more. Now I'm not lying there wanting to get off to have a cigarette. Mm-hmm. It's made bedtime a much more calming and pleasant experience. I hope for Scarlett too, to be honest.
I have found that with this bug that I've got, I really struggle at bedtime to stay awake. I really struggle at my desk to stay awake at the moment. But normally I find it all. I think I'm kind of the opposite of you. I'm finding it so easy being a dad at this point. But I know that, and to be fair, this might be something I've inherited a bit from my mum and maybe even my parents. Once he starts flexing his own personality, like properly, and he stops being, it becomes less about physical demands and more about emotional and intellectual demands. Like, I'm having to navigate through behaviours that he actually does have control of. I'm going to have to be very careful because I might struggle with those a little bit more. So what was your... Because I get the feeling you had an issue, a sleeping issue.
We did. Well, we had a nice weekend. My mum... Although this maybe leads on to maybe it's a whole conversation to be had about how the kindness of your parents can sometimes lead to them being kinder than you'd like them to be.
Passive-aggressively kind? Or?
Yeah, kind of. My mum had Scarlett this weekend, which was very nice of her. She had her from Thursday night until Sunday. Now, originally when Nick had arranged, it's because Nikki's working again, my wife Nikki's working again, and previously she had every Friday off. Our arrangement with the nursery is still 4 days a week. So we've been juggling days about, but also her mum and dad have looked after Scarlett, had a sleepover, and my mum and her partner have now had Scarlett over for a sleepover on a Thursday night so they can look after her on a Friday. Now, we realised that obviously if they hadn't had them Thursday night, it'd be difficult for us to get down to. They live in a county adjacent to ours.
Right.
And it's about a 45-minute drive to get to them. So it'd have been tough on the Friday night to have been working all day, drive down there, be down there long enough to be sociable, then drive back and Scarlett would be sick. So we agreed, definitely the Friday night. Now, Nicola thought she'd arranged originally to pick her up on the Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Also, bearing in mind, there's only a number of weekends left until Christmas. But Mum said she'd like to have her on the Saturday. Could we pick her up on the Sunday? And Nikki agreed to that. And then Mum decided she was going to cook us dinner on the Sunday. And that was 5 o'clock.
That's like your whole weekend taken up.
And then, well, we had to sort of rein that back to say, well, can we come and have lunch with you maybe? But
because lunch is really a smaller meal, less obligation.
Ended up being a full roast. And bless her, my mum still seems to think that when you roast meat, you need to roast it until it's burnt to make sure it's dead, which is it's kind of why I learned to cook. Is my mother really is not a good cook at all. So I ended up, we didn't really leave there until about 4 o'clock, and Nikki really wanted Scarlett to help with the putting up of the Christmas decorations. I have to say, it was very nice. It was nice for Nikki and I to have some adult time, and we actually got quite a lot of cleaning done and stuff on the Saturday that we can't normally get done with Scarlett. And we like to have a really good deep clean in the flat before Christmas, before the decorations go up. Anyway, Scarlett's asleep by the time she gets up, by the time we get home, and she didn't wake up till gone 6 o'clock.
Right.
By which time, the majority of the decorations are up. So Scarlett's been away. She hasn't seen us since Thursday morning. All of the decorations are up. Her room's a little bit different because I had to swap it around to take some stuff out that was in our dining room, put it in her room. Yeah. Her room's different. We've decorated that as well. Kind of, bless her tiny little mind was blown by it all. So we're trying to get her to sleep at 8 o'clock. She didn't settle last night until gone 11:30.
My goodness.
Bless her. Her brain was just buzzing so much from, I haven't seen mummy and daddy for 3 days, plus oh my God, all of the Christmas decorations are up. Christmas is on its way. I'm so excited. And it's kind of, had we sort of controlled my mum's behaviour and had her back on the Saturday, we could have kind of dealt with that, but we had to deal with a very excited child on the one night of the week that you really want them to go to sleep in good time. I find Sunday night's the most important sleep of the week because it kind of sets the tone for your working week, doesn't it? So that was a bit difficult.
Oh, your sleep.
Yeah, absolutely, as an adult, because I think that's...
Sorry, I forgot who I was talking to for a minute. I should have guessed we were talking about you.
Well, Nikki and I.
Yeah.
And it's important.
And Scarlett, I mean, she needs to be in bed by 11.
No, she needs to be in bed by 8. I mean,
yeah, that's right. I mean, she needs to not be up till 11.
Yeah, I mean, her sleep patterns for the week are blown already.
Yeah.
And also, as the adults, I think it's important that our sleep patterns are... So that was a bit irritating. But then I found out that my mother has already told Nicola that we have to come down to see her on Saturday.
Next Saturday.
Next Saturday to see Santa. I had intended to take Scarlett out for Christmas Day... Christmas shopping day with me on Friday, which has now been commandeered by my mother, who wants me to meet her at lunchtime for to meet some of her friends. I'm getting to this point where before Scarlett, I could literally go like a couple of months without seeing my mum and her partner.
Yeah.
And even now, three and a half years into having Scarlett, I don't have the tools to deal with my mother being really demanding in terms of our time, to the point where we're getting a bit worried that actually there isn't any time left for Nikki's mum and dad.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we factor them into the equation now.
Just tell your mum no, for fuck's sake.
This all seems to have... It's one of those... I'm usually quite good at putting my foot down with my mum, actually.
I'm too good at doing it with my mum.
But this is kind of... I feel like I've been sort of railroaded without really seeing it coming at all. And it's odd because... They're not too bad during the year, but all of a sudden Christmas, especially with a kid, and I assume that you'll find that this year, your family wants so much more of you, you know?
Amy's quite good at keeping this organised and quite rigid, so we have three Christmases. We have Christmas with her family. We have Christmas with, and that's one weekend. And then we have Christmas with our friends Oki and Matt. So that's another weekend. And then we have actual Christmas, which is just us and the dogs and now the baby as well. And I envision that will stay the same. And we try and visit my family in between Christmas and New Year's. So she keeps it quite under control. It's still more contact with other people. I would like to have a few weekends free.
Yeah.
But it's just, it feels like, I mean, the thing is, knowing you, I don't know that much about your relationship with your mum when you were younger. But I have to get some sense that even if it was by being lovely, she's fucked you up somehow. Because you can't have got this way just through nature. And so you had all of those years of we're just carrying all of that stuff around. And I feel this way with my situation as well. You had... All those years were okay. You had to carry around the problems. You had to carry around the internal problems that you had because of your upbringing. But at least you didn't have to deal with them that much. Like you said, you could go a few months without seeing them. I could go a few months without even talking to mine, like literally six months without even talking to mine. But then you might have known the second you get a child in the house and that's you've got that complication, your parents would find some way to... fuck with your life again.
They are desperately interested in... Well, it's another...
And it's by niceness, which is the worst sort of...
It's another human being for them to fuck up.
Yeah.
It's going, right, I'm done with that one. That one's... I've done a
and
job
with that
one. And it's your
job to fuck Scarlett.
I'm going to have got fucking this one up now. No, but they don't know, do they? Because this is... As a grandparent, it's your chance to... You just come in. That's the glory role.
Yeah.
Isn't it? You get to do the glory role as the grandparent. Whereas it's the parent that's just like, right, you can fuck that child up. I fucked you up. You fuck that child up. I'll come and I'll shower them with gifts.
The one thing that's quite good about both of our sets of parents, and my parents and Amy's parents couldn't be more different with how they brought us up and also how they are now. But all of them are quite... We haven't intellectualised it with my parents. There hasn't been any sort of a discussion. But all of them are quite hands-off. Yeah. They're interested in Noah. They're very interested in Noah, but they won't. None of them. Amy's parents are very careful about giving us advice. Her mum very much doesn't want to be the interfering grandmother. So to the extent that she's prefaced certain stuff she said with, look, tell me if it's none of my business. And so they're not that demanding. And we've already got structures in place for going and seeing them. And it happens that there are a few birthdays that fall around in her family that fall around that time. So we already go up for those anyway. And we can get those all over with at once. I think this is a completely different area. But I think for men, it always feels like the stakes are higher. When you give advice in a sensitive area, you're almost challenging the other guy's dominance
in that situation.
Mm-hmm. And so that would be an argument for not doing it. Now, personally, I don't have a problem with it. And if someone's advice is unwelcome or I don't agree with it, I will just say, yeah, well, I mean, it's thanks, but we're not going to do it. So it's fine. But actually, I think it's almost the relationship between a mother and her daughter in this situation, because I've seen it with my mum and my sister, can be, it's like, oh, well, but we have this female relationship with each other, so it's fine for me to give you advice and stuff, because that's what the mother's supposed to do to her daughter, is to help her with the bait. But actually, no, there are lines being crossed all over the place. But my mum wouldn't do that with Amy, because Amy isn't her daughter, if you see what I mean. So she doesn't feel comfortable just stomping in and saying, you should be doing this, you blah, 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 blah. There might be people in my family who are a big Greek family with lots of very strong characters. There might be a few people who don't have any trouble giving unsolicited advice. But they all kind of know that I'll always go my own way. So I don't end up having to deal with that very often. So we have this situation. My dad's a bit nervous about handling a small baby. So as Noah gets bigger and more robust, he's more interested. But we don't have that situation, the situation that you described, where they obviously love him. Like both sets of parents obviously love him. But my parents, because of our fractious relationship, are a bit too, and because they've got other stuff going on, they're a bit too nervous of me to really push it, maybe. And they've got two grandsons up there to worry about. And Amy's parents are pretty chilled out about that stuff anyway. Well, now you're kind of stuck with, I mean, the Scarlet, is she all right today? Did she sleep okay in the end?
Yeah, she's fine. I haven't seen her today. Well, I have. I saw her this morning. She seemed well enough. She made me turn the Christmas tree lights on. I say she made me. She asked me. And she's got a nice new pair of boots at grandma. I mean, it's difficult because actually both sets of grandparents, Nicola's parents are less likely to offer advice, actually. They're very good with that. I think Nick's mum has a few times. My mum seems more keen to offer passive-aggressive criticisms.
Yeah, well, that's like advice. So that's what when I say mum advice, I mean passive-aggressive criticisms.
Although,
that of you...
Not necessarily.
She's known Nicola since Nicola was, 14?
Yeah, 15.
So 15, so she probably doesn't have any trouble.
Yeah, Nicola's, this is a whole world of complication. Nicola's like the daughter she never had. There is a whole story around that, which I won't go into now. But actually, it's kind of played into our favour, I think. And also, this had an impact on last night in the sleep. Scarlett, had a dummy to pacify her. And up until this weekend, at home, when she was tired, she would still have her dummy. Now, I was a real finger sucker when I was younger, and I felt that a dummy was preferable to knackering your teeth and your fingers by sucking.
Yeah. Oh, Noah's found his thumb. That's something that's happened over the last... But we're quite happy about it because it looks cute.
It's fine. But, my mum hates dummies with a passion. Scarlett went two nights.
As your mum, that must be really difficult.
Yeah.
Because dummies.
Because that's also a thing that you call people who are thick. She went two nights this week without a dummy. She didn't have one last night. So actually, my mum has, in a way, because we were going to use Christmas to try and break that behaviour. Mm. We've been told it's quite good. Birthdays and Christmas is basically you surrender the dummy in return for a gift. So,
yeah.
For example, you give Father Christmas the dummy and he will bring you a gift. And that's something we're going to do. But it looks like my mum's actually broken that behaviour for us, which is, while she's been quite passive-aggressive about mentioning the dummy over time, it actually seems that her wanting desperately to stop her doing it has actually, she's done a job for us over
Did
this weekend.
Did she know that you were going to break that behaviour, though?
I had mentioned it to her. Okay. But, to be honest, I'm not massively bothered that she's done it, as long as Scarlett wasn't like overly distressed by it, because I actually think it's better for her to be weaned off it slowly than for her to go potty and be really distressed.
Yeah, because that's how it worked with you and smoking. So,
I'm not entirely sure. There are some similarities.
I think in that situation it won't work for everyone.
Sure. I also think that, you know, we'll break that behaviour eventually, but you know, she's going to go the rest of her life without a dummy. And, like, she's only 3.
Only if you stop her now, though.
Well, yeah.
My sister was still sucking her thumb until she was, like, 11. That's why I have mixed feelings about that.
For sure. But, we're always going to wean her off it. But I never saw the need to do it super early.
So, it's
let her be young while she's young, you know?
It's not going to... But being young, one of the characteristics of being young... If this was Family Fortunes and... you had a thing at the top. Mm. What is being young all about? What are the characteristics? Sure. You'd have playing, shitting in a nappy, maybe, depending on how cynical the 100 people you asked were. You'd have dolls or soft toys, being cute, crying, teething.
I'm sorry, Nick,
but
teething
like
wasn't in our
having category. A dummy. Isn't sure. necessarily one of those things you because you said, she's only young once. Let her, you know, YOLO.
No. But what I'm saying is obviously it's a behaviour that you want to break, and it's because of us that she had the dummy. It's something she's attached to. It's something that around the house you can kind of get away with when you're 3.
Mm-hmm.
She likes it. I don't understand why there was a rush before now. To do it. We had a plan for this Christmas to do it. But it kind of vexed me that even from almost the second it first went in, my mum has wanted to end the behaviour.
I think...
I'm not bothered that it's ended now, but I'm like, you know, when she's like, you know, one and a half years old or something, well, why are you so desperate to... It's one of those, as long as... you're talking about it.
No, it's okay. I forgot what I was going
to say. It's one of those behaviours that I think there are certain behaviours you need to break by the time they get to school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was a well. We have to break it by the time we get to school. But is there a mad rush to do it? You know.
Yeah, you pretty much. That's textbook complacency.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think so. Well, there was. There's.
If you're going to do it anyway, does she need it now?
Sure.
Look, I don't have a horse in the Scarlet with her dummy race.
I think textbook complacency would be she's going to secondary school. And we think she still has a dummy in the
abuse,
evening.
That's abuse, what you're describing there.
Okay.
That's neglect.
Okay.
But no, when I say textbook complacency, I mean, well, you know, and God, I've spent the last week trying to work out what task list app system I was going to use, because I need to do something about this stuff.
Sure.
But when there's something that you know needs to happen, and there's no real benefit to it not happening, but you say, oh, we'll leave it, that's complacency, isn't it? That's your, well, it's fine now.
Sure.
Why worry about it?
It is. And I suppose it's difficult to have it labelled as such, isn't it? Because when you label a behaviour as being complacent and it's a behaviour that's connected to your child...
Mm.
Then complacent sounds not too far removed away, as our conversation proved, from neglect. And that's an uncomfortable position to be in, you know?
That's just the way I communicate.
But I think complacency as a parent is part of there is a constant trade-off between doing the right thing and living a life that you all find bearable.
Well, the thing is, the opposite of complacency is... I don't think complacency is necessarily that negative a thing, because there are some behaviours that don't need fixing.
I clearly see it as negative. Yeah, and I think we're most of us conditioned.
But there are some, like, and because it's easy for me to take this point of view, because I found it hilarious that on the one hand you'd started by saying you were happy and it had worked for you, that your mum had changed this behaviour. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work for everyone, but I suspect that it is easier. Maybe it's possible that as the grandmother, rather than the people who are in the house with Scarlett all the time, it might almost have been easier for your grandmother to say, oh, no, come on, you don't need it. And for Scarlett to just take the direction from her grandmother, because it's a different situation. And so and maybe that's why Christmas and birthdays are a good time as well, because they're unusual times when strange things happen. So maybe they're a good time for changes like that. So I just found it funny because you were clearly happy that your mother had taken that decision away from you, because it was convenient for you. But at the same time, there's still that niggling feeling in the back of your head. What? But I mean, she didn't need to, did she?
I think it's got an awful lot to do with the relationship dynamic with my mother as well. It's her taking control, her taking some power away from me.
Yeah.
So, but like I say, we had a very difficult and confrontational relationship when I was younger.
But it's about a small thing as well. So, like, if you were complacent about, there are behaviours that we can kind of tell, well, okay, you don't want her sucking a dummy until, you don't want her relying on a dummy for ages and ages. But there are other things like, well, she does like to go off and I'm not saying this about Scarlett, but like, she or he does like to go off and read rather than, like, she doesn't go out and play football or games with other people, competitive games. And maybe she's a bit introverted and maybe we could do something about that. And it's like, well, it's the same. The complacency is that by saying, well, I mean, just leave her to it, though. She's fine. It's not really going to be a problem for a while. Let her get into this habit. So it's not a problem. It's the same behavior. It's exactly the same sort of. Do you know what I mean? It's the same sort of thing. Because the opposite thing is, you fret about every single damn thing.
Yeah.
Like, Amy and I have come to, and we're both really similarly obsessive about this, but in slightly different ways. We both realise that we don't necessarily want to bring up Noah living where we're living. It's not so much to do with the schools, but it's in the middle of the city. And so we'd both rather be somewhere a bit quieter where we're not surrounded by students on either side and stuff. And that's making us separately start to really hate all of the little things that are wrong with our house, because suddenly they're not just bits of character. They are impediments to potentially selling it down the line. But we had a similar situation when we wanted to buy a place in the first place. And I probably mentioned this before, where it's my tendency to be easygoing about this stuff to the point where I become complacent and I'm like, well, there's no hurry. But the opposite version to that is that at least a year before we could afford to buy a place, before we would even get a mortgage, and before we had a deposit and a whole bunch of different things, because we had made the decision that we wanted to buy somewhere eventually, Amy was obsessed with getting people round to value, not to value the place, because that's now. Like, we're getting people around to value the place and stuff like this. But back then, she was obsessed with looking at estate agents listings of places and saying, well, maybe we should go and look at places. Mm. And I was like, well, this is the opposite of my complacency. On the one hand, if you left it to me, we would never end up buying a place. But on the other hand, getting ourselves stressed and into this energetic state in advance of us being able to do anything about it anyway is also problematic. So, like, you've got to try, and there are things that you can be complacent about. There are things you need to be more stressed about, and it's each different thing needs to be taken on. But I mean, you know, we're overthinking the dummy. We've got the dummies on the side. We've never ruled them out.
Sure.
They came as part of the Tommy Tippy set.
Yeah, that's it. They try to.
Yeah. And we haven't,
Tommy
we haven't
Tippy
ruled them out.
Tommy Tippy wants you to put a dummy in the child's mouth.
Luckily, we haven't had to make the decision, because he's normally fine. Mm. With, like, you can stick your finger in his mouth and throttle him. No, you can stick your finger in his mouth and he'll suck on that for a minute and he'll normally be fine. And he doesn't need anything more. But like I said, with the taggy, we were almost the opposite of complacent. We were like, well, what should we do? It's a simple decision. We either give him something that might calm him down, or we wait until he starts crying and then give him something. That's not a complicated, it's not a big deal. But because of the sort of people we are, we were like, it became this big discussion. And the problem is that because we're equally as energetic, we're in such slightly different ways, sometimes conflict ends up. I could see that in this particular case, that conversation didn't turn into an argument, but it can do very quickly because if I feel that we're not having a proper conversation, we're just having like a difference of opinion and it's not really going anywhere. Or if I feel that this was worth talking about for 3 or 4 minutes, but any more than that, and we're just, I'm bored of it by now. We made a decision. We don't need to worry about it anymore. That can end up becoming a completely different sort of conversation. Sure. But no, I mean, yeah, good call, letting your mum. You can, I mean, and the good thing is, as time goes on, you can let your mum take, at any time you need something taking from Scarlett that makes her happy but ultimately isn't going to be good for her, you can let your mum
do that. Scarlett, why don't
she can be the wicked grandmother.
Take your feckless boyfriend down to your grandmother's for the weekend.
She'll soon
Where's your feckless boyfriend that I dislike? What a shame. Oh, you've given him up. He's in the bottom of your pink bag.
Well, because they will sometimes take... Well, you know, because you were a kid yourself. Your parents are the last people you want to have influence you at all. You will actively fight being influenced by your parents, but it doesn't seem so bad coming from your grandparents.
That is true. I absolutely doted on my grandmother. I only had one grandparent for the last vast majority of my enjoyable childhood. And that was really from sort of 5 to 9, I think, was relatively happy.
It's a good time of day.
Yeah, that was relatively happy.
Yeah.
And I only had one grandparent in the country at the time, but my relationship with her was really close.
It's very specific, though.
Mm.
5 to 9, you've done your homework, it's not quite bedtime, but every day, 5 to 9, that was the happy part of your childhood.
The ages.
All right, okay.
Between 5 until 9, or maybe 4 until the age of 9.
After one of our podcasts last week, because Jane hasn't been with us, I'm getting confused about which ones. I think it was the Momcast.
Okay, that's the comic book podcast, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. You were, probably rightly, you were showing concern that I seemed quite glum.
You did seem very glum. Yeah. I was concerned.
Part of it is that because I'm not very well.
Not so concerned that I backed it up with a fucking text or anything, but I was...
Yeah, I mean, you weren't that fussed. Yeah. But, I mean, you really just wanted to make sure that you hadn't done anything to it. It was about you, really.
Well, just a minute. Isn't it interesting the value I place on certain things? I asked you in person, genuinely cared, and asked you in person how you were, but I'm admonishing myself because I didn't
text me afterwards.
Send you a text
like
afterwards.
Like, I'd have been like, well, of course we talked about this, you idiot.
Stupid man.
I think part of it is that I'm not very well.
Hmm.
So, everything's more difficult. And I actually, the podcasts I do and the website I do, Elephant Words and stuff like that, they make me genuinely happy. So they're the only thing, like between them and work, I'd sooner do them. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to stop, I'm not going to stop doing them. But definitely in the lead up to Thought Bubble, I was thinking there are certain of these projects. There are places I want. It's suddenly starting to get to me a little bit, and part of that is again part of that's that I'm quite tired, and so everything's happening more slowly, and I'm getting up that little bit later in the morning, mm-hmm. so I'm not getting to go in and grab 5 minutes with Noah, and it's my time is suddenly becoming way more important to me, and in the run up to. And every night we do a podcast, I don't see Noah before bedtime. But the truth is, even the nights when I'm working a little bit later, because I work on Flexi, So even the nights when I'm working a little bit later, I don't necessarily get to see Noah before bedtime. And I didn't think that would bother me because I see him in the mornings. But in the lead up to Thought Bubble and it got worse at Thought Bubble, I started thinking, well, this starts becoming a problem because really I'd rather be doing this.
Mm.
I'd rather be podcasting. I'd rather be doing the online stuff. So I have to, so it's almost not, there's a part of me that is happy to keep doing it for nothing except the love and adoration we get from the people who do get something from it.
Well, you really are doing it for nothing.
Yeah. But at the same time, part of me would, this desire to kind of think, well, but it would be better if you know, it feels like it's only the ability to put a bit more time into it or whatever that stops this being something that's more sustainable. And Thought Bubble made that even more difficult because it was a very expensive weekend, which I very much enjoyed. But I was suddenly very struck by, okay, I'm still loving this. I'm not going to underplay how much fun it is spending time around my people, in inverted commas, again, and going out for nice meals with people. And it's nice. It's like a little holiday, but it's so expensive. And if my wife and son aren't here, and this was never a concern when it was just my wife and dogs, but if my family isn't here and it's expensive, it has to mean I have to have a plan next time. I have to either have something out, like something written and out, or there has to be something more deliberately momcasty going on there, because Jane and I and you as well, it doesn't matter how, with all the goodwill in the world, we are never going to be the sort of people who can go up to people with a recording device and just interview them. Most of the time, we don't even know what to say to them.
Exactly.
So there has to be something more. And because I've come back from Thought Bubble and I'm just knackered and ill and I've had time off work because I've been so ill, and that's frustrating because it's time off work but I'm sleeping till lunchtime and then too tired to do anything, suddenly it's really brought to the forefront this, well, I decided that I have to do more with this extracurricular stuff and I'm not. And so while we were recording, and I wrote all this in an email to someone earlier, so this is why it's clear in my head. While we're recording, I'm like, I'm loving it. But then in the 15 minutes when I'm exporting the file to my phone or to my memory stick, and I'm thinking about, okay, well, this is going to take 15 minutes, even though you're lovely company. And then I'm going to schlep home, and I'm probably not going to make it home in time to see Noah. And then I'm going to be editing, and I'm tired. The whole coming back from Thought Bubble and having to have a plan, I feel like I've already kind of, that's when it comes to me. Well, but, and
you're creating additional unnecessary obligation. And I feel I can empathize with that to a certain extent because I went through a very similar thing after we had Scarlett and we were only doing one podcast at the time, but I was very productive in terms of, I used to blog very regularly.
Yeah.
You know, at times, I used to be able to get 3 or 4 pieces out a week. And I haven't written anything in over a year because I find that I do 2 podcasts. That's kind of enough selfish time away from Scarlett.
Yeah.
Everything else kind of has to be reserved for either completely chilling out, not doing anything because I need to recharge, or just focused on her, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and I'm playing with... I'm burning a lot of time on video games at the moment, but that's because I don't really have the brain power for anything else. So it's either TV really the part I resent is the 9-to-5 day job.
For sure.
Because it's not, I enjoy it. I enjoy what I'm doing most of the time, but it's not creative and it's not, I don't own it.
Mm.
And so it's not really, it's paying for our house. But it's not playing that much into quality of life or any of that stuff. And so, and the thing I really resent, why I'm thinking about this to bring it back really to, because we do need to be finishing soon. We went to, for the first time in months, we went and had lunch with the other NCT couples.
Sure.
Who I talked about a lot at the beginning, and they're still, we think about them a lot. Amy sees them a lot, and I speak to them on some of them on Facebook. But the one thing that became really obvious spending time with them yesterday, this is the first time that most of the babies and the husbands and wives have all been in one place together since, I think since actually before all of the babies were born. There was one person missing because they were ill, which was a shame. And Noah was dressed as an elf, like a little Santa's elf. And he looked very cute, if a bit bemused. There's this interesting stage at the beginning of the, because it was lunchtime. So I think all of the babies had had their nap, like one nap for the day. But then they were turning up in this strange environment. And they all seemed a bit confused until they'd had a bit of a cry or a little nap. Mm. And then they all woke up and they were like, most of them were a little bit more. And it's interesting to see how, because I always feel a little bit like babies, or before I had one of my own, I always felt a little bit like they tend to look the same.
Sure.
There's two or three types.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting how distinctive all of these babies were. And it was lovely to see everyone. But the few dads I saw there, because it's the dads who haven't seen each other. The
sure.
last time most of us saw each other was when at Alpha Papa, we went and saw that, and I drank a Ladyboy. three of us drank Ladyboys. It wasn't just me. I wasn't on my own there.
It's one of those nights, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
We've all had them.
But that was months ago, and that was the last time most of us had, I think, unless they're all partying and they haven't been inviting me, but I don't think that's the case. But I was like, well, but we're all making the effort with our kids and stuff. Why have we been so rubbish at like meeting each other and stuff? And when the women have been so good at keeping up, and this is so obvious, but because I think of us as all quite contemporary and quite, you know, involved fathers and modern and stuff like that, one of the mums just said, well, it's because you're all at work. And it suddenly slammed into me how, actually, in some ways, fatherhood hasn't changed. It feels like we're different, like we're more involved.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to know a little bit more about what schools and nurseries or what's going on with the child that way than men 50 years ago might have done, or 40 years or 30 years. But even among all of these men, many of whom are way, like some of them have their own businesses or they're way better organized than I am. They manage to maintain their hobbies and stuff a lot better than I do. But like all of us, we're doing this thing where we go to work before the baby's awake. We come home, if we're lucky, just mm-hmm. before the baby goes to sleep. But if we do anything after work at all, or we have a busy day at work, or we have an affair or something, we're going to miss the baby that evening. You know,
how do men, very young children, have affairs?
I assume.
How would you do that?
Lunchtimes.
You would have to be a lunchtime lover.
Have to be lunchtime. You'd have to really organise your day.
Mm. I only get half an hour. Although, to be fair, how long do I need?
Yeah, well, that's it. Exactly. Mm. 15 minutes to get to where you're going. A minute of heavy petting.
Yeah.
That'll normally do me.
Yeah.
Because it's all exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
New.
But
yeah, and this isn't, it's not a competition about who it's hardest for, but I've really been feeling that, and I didn't think I would. And there have been points where when we started doing this, Amy said, well, that's two evenings a week. You're not going to see Noah. And it's like, well, and I was like, but I'm okay. I still get the nighttime feed, you know, the 11 o'clock feed, and I see him during the day, and I see him like, it's fine.
Mm.
And the podcasts aren't really a strain on that. But what I've really been feeling recently is I leave work before he wakes up or before he's up and about,
mm-hmm.
and I get home if I'm even on the days when I'm not doing extra stuff, if I'm lucky just before he goes to bed, and that's rubbish. And I'm by no means rare in that regard, but that's being a working dad is rubbish.
Yeah, for sure.
It's really sucky. I didn't think I was going to have this much trouble with it. I genuinely thought I'd be more pragmatic about it. But I've got to the point where I can't go in and see him for 10 minutes before I leave because it's too much of a wrench to go to work after.
When does Amy go back to work?
Not till next year.
because I know
teachers get to take liberties.
I know experience isn't universal.
Mm.
But in many ways, it got easier for me when Nikki went back to work. It just, in so much as, well, it just sucks for both of us now.
Mm.
And I don't think men have changed an awful lot, but what has changed is society has changed in so much as you don't send one of the parents out to work now to make life sustainable. You both have to do it.
So both of you are unhappy.
So neither of the parents get that experience of seeing their child grow up through those precious early years, and the child doesn't get the experience of being with their parent through those years either. So it's kind of like a clusterfuck that society has created for itself.
Except that I think that parents weren't as emotional. Well, parents weren't as intellectually, emotionally engaged with their children or with... What I'm getting at is, I'm not saying that everyone was happy with the situation, but women were the housewife and the child was the child. The woman stayed at home, looked after the house and maybe had a job. And it's not even about gender roles, really, whoever was at home. But I think people were happy that they were the parents, that was the child. The child went off to school. You love the child, but you don't expect to, like, you don't necessarily have to worry. People aren't that worried about that. Weren't that worried about the emotional life of their child. They saw it as their job to, both parents saw it as their job to earn enough money to provide shelter and some sort of structure and discipline. And so I can't see the men of 50 years ago fretting. They it's like that Sting song, I hope the Russians loved their children too. Obviously they loved the children as much, but I don't think they felt the need to necessarily be as involved in every part of the child's emotional life as we want to be now.
How you say didn't feel the need,
mm-hmm.
or... felt society.
They weren't trained to. Because
it's very possible that men felt the need, but felt incapable of doing it because of what's expected by society of them as a man.
Isn't that mapping our?
Possibly. I don't know. I'm asking
we can't
the
go
question.
Back and do them a questionnaire.
I'm asking the question because I genuinely don't know. It might have been like the men of 50 to 60 years ago were bloody miserable because what they really wanted to do was spend time with their family, but felt like they shouldn't do that because that's not what society expected of them.
It feels like it
should be a bit like in the William Hartnell drama recently, where you could tell, although he was very cross with his grandchild, really what he wanted to do was love her very much. It's not true.
I don't understand because I didn't see the documentary. No. But it's the William Hartnell drama Doctor Who, the early years.
Adventure in Time and Space.
I mean, I don't know. It's easy to map our desires onto people back then. Mm. But I don't know if the 19... there were economical drivers for everyone working harder and wanting more in the 70s and 80s.
Mm.
But there were also people making the decision to do that, to spend less time with their kids and more time trying to get stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean? It feels like what we feel you need to do as a parent...
Sure.
Has changed culturally. And we are all driven by culture, like, because half the decisions we make because we want to, like, because we have an emotional need.
Sure.
But a whole load of, we talk about the pressure that you get to breastfeed and the pressure that you get to, the guilt you feel because you're not, you probably felt a little bit, as much as you were a bit complacent about the dummy thing, you probably felt, there was probably, knowing you, a little bit of guilt that she was still using the dummy and maybe you should have done something about that. I know that whenever my dogs do anything wrong, that makes them unhappy.
There was guilt, she speaks perfectly clearly.
Yeah.
But having the dummy in and allowing, and her talking while she's doing, does actually slightly retard her ability to learn to speak clearly. So yeah,
but linguistically,
yeah, she seems to be okay and doesn't have any detrimental effect from it. And I'd always ask her if she's talking to me. I'd say, take your dummy out if you want to talk to me. However, I think that's where the guilt came from, actually, as much so
that's,
as anything.
And that's
because the comfort thing I'm fine with.
I don't think my parents, and I think this is one of the few things where they weren't atypical from other parents. I don't think my parents necessarily felt that much guilt about day-to-day decisions they were making with us. I've heard you talk about how you feel when you have an argument in front of Scarlett with
to
Nicola.
To the point where...
And I don't think my parents ever were... Because children weren't... It wasn't that important. You know, the child's experience, well, you know, they're the child. They're to be... Yeah. They are, you know, you're adults. They're the child. They're just going to have to deal with it.
It's funny that I managed to sabotage myself in a way... With the argument I had last Monday morning with Nicola, which was horrible. Thanks for asking. We're getting on just fine at the moment. But it was a horrible...
I asked you before the show. Don't be an asshole.
It was horrible. I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to a notional listener.
Oh.
Hello, notional listener. Mm-hmm. But I managed to find a way to sabotage myself, to take the guilt of that moment and kind of embed it for the long term. I didn't even do it knowingly, but I managed to give you something that you found would make an appropriate title for the show. So every time I look at the title of last week's show, Daddy Hurts My Ears, I immediately go back to that moment. It's horrible.
That was really nasty of me.
It was.
And
I knew it was
when I did it. Yeah, I'm sorry. I haven't worked out what I'm going to call this episode to fuck with you.
Yeah. Whatever hurts James most is it's
whatever hurts. Well, you've said that now, so I can use that as the title. I think I just think you can't think like that because
I can and I do.
Well, but if you second guess yourself in the arguments with Nicola that she probably started, to be fair,
I'm not going to say that because Nicola listens back to these.
But yeah, but
I'm not going to say she did. She definitely did.
Look, until you until you win one of these arguments properly, the argument's just going to keep happening, and that's no good for Scarlett.
I'll never win an argument.
Because you feel guilt.
I'm going to win this argument.
You need to crush down that guilt.
I might win this argument, but I won't.
It's not an argument. It's just a discussion.
Well, I'm saying it's an argument.
You can't withhold sex from me, so it's not an argument.
I can continue to withhold sex from
That's true. I think it's time to go. I think we've got the James Hurting title, so it's all good.
Good.
If you want to read about any of the things we mentioned, they're normally quite... This is you listener, not James. James already knows about this. There are
I've stopped listening because I know he's not talking to me.
There tend to be quite extensive show notes about all of the things we've talked about on the website. The website is 2gm.co or 2grownmen.net. And excuse me, you can find all of our past episodes there as well. Sound quality is normally better on those ones, but the content probably is roughly as bad.
Oh, at least as bad.
At least as bad.
Well, listen back to this one. I think this might be one of the more coherent ones.
Maybe it could. It could well be. We will be back next week,
all being well,
unless something drastic happens to James's foot.
Do you know, I'd like something drastic to happen to it just so there's some action.
Action.
Foot action.
Bye-bye, listener.
Bye-bye.